I felt that the White House belonged to everybody and they had a right to petition their government. Women all over this world are experiencing success today in a different way than they ever have.
Once upon a time, a small town politician from Rochester, New York, named Midge Costanza, believed in the cause of equality for men and women and wasn't afraid to say it to anyone.
I stand before you, someone who some of you may totally agree with, some of you may partially agree with, and some of you will try to aim at my bulletproof bra before I can do it.
Margaret Midge Costanza used that bulletproof bra line wherever she campaigned. She was a feminist, an activist, and someone who believed that Jimmy Carter would give feminism a higher public profile than ever before. In 1976, she showed her success to the world on the podium at the Democratic National Convention in New York City. Under President Jimmy Carter, Midge Costanza was named first woman assistant for public liaison to a U.S. president. Costanza didn't have a college education, but she used her position to push for women's rights, a more open administration, but was unsuccessful on gay and lesbian rights in the 1976 Democratic Party platform. As a White House insider, she enthralled the press, but tension between her and Carter's white male inner circle led to her early resignation. Doreen Mattingly is an associate professor of women's studies at San Diego State University and author of A Feminist in the White House, Midge Costanza, The Carter Years, and America's Culture Wars. She says Costanza, who died in 2010, never lost her feisty spirit.
She was a one of a kind. She was an activist within the political system. She believed in democracy. She believed in participatory democracy, specifically that people could use the political system to make change. And that's what she tried to do as city councilwoman in Rochester, New York, and as assistant to President Carter. But she was also a street smart, working class, funny, irreverent broad, you might say, who had a style that surprised a lot of people in Washington.
How did she rise so high to have the ear of President Carter for as long as she did?
Carter came to Rochester, New York, where she was running for Congress in 1974, and the two just became fast friends. He trusted her. He didn't have too many friends in New York, so he asked her to run his New York State presidential campaign. She was an idealist, but she differed from Carter on a number of issues. She was a Roosevelt Democrat. She wanted a large government and he wanted a small one. She thought that an open administration meant bringing everybody in to state their opinion, and he meant that an open administration was transparent and not subject to political maneuvering. They differed on how he should keep his promises to America. She felt like he needed to do more for disenfranchised groups. And he felt, for women, for example, he had done enough by appointing women to high office like her.
How was her chemistry with other prominent feminists of the time, Gloria Steinem, Bella Abzug?
Bella was a dear friend for her whole life until Bella passed, and her mentor in many ways. And she turned to Bella and Gloria both for advice when she was in the White House and listened to them a lot about how to proceed on women's issues.
Did she think that the Watergate moment was a transformative moment and that she was living at the exact perfect time to accomplish what she wanted to accomplish?
Watergate confirmed her beliefs about the need for participatory democracy and an open administration. And so Watergate certainly legitimated her approach in her mind to what she was doing in the White House, bringing in the perspectives of marginalized groups of gays and lesbians, of Native Americans, of women, and trying to use the White House to advocate them. And so whether she believed it created the perfect opportunity, it did create an opportunity that she tried to exploit to the best of her ability to forward the issues she believed in.
Did she misread the political winds of the time in terms of what her power actually was versus what she thought it could be?
I think in some ways she was surprised she lasted as long as she did. And I think that she read accurately the political winds of the time about the rise of the right. she was the voice in the White House who was always telling Carter he could not straddle social issues that were becoming more and more partisan. He couldn't straddle the abortion issue. He couldn't try to play both sides on gay rights. He could not craft a middle road. He needed to go to the left.
What do you know of the moment when Midge Costanza really understood that she had to part company with Jimmy Carter on some level?
She had been asked to tell David Hartman, the host of Good Morning America, that she would have a headache and wouldn't be on the show the next day. There was a scandal that broke about drugs in the White House, and they didn't want her on national TV. And she said, no, I'm not going to lie for you. This is how Watergate started. People lied. And when she got called into the president's office, he asked her why she didn't lie. And she said that was the moment when she knew that she no longer had any protection in the White House and that she had to go. And she wrote, if you could hear a heartbreak, that's what you would have heard in that room.
What was her belief in the Equal Rights Amendment, and what did she expect would happen, and how did she respond when the ERA went into the dustbin of 70s and 80s history?
Like many supporters of the ERA at that time, she believed that it was possible and that President Carter could use the bully pulpit, could use the power of the office to educate people about why it was important. And she spent a lot of her political capital in the White House trying to convince him to do so. And he didn't. And I think that was one of her great regrets, that she wasn't able to do that.
The unspoken sort of notion of your book is that people like Midge Costanza get forgotten by history. She did so much, and yet she really isn't a part of the history that mainstream Americans know about or would even learn about. Why do you think that is?
Part of it was because she was an individualist and individual, and so she was often out of step with both the women's movement and the Carter White House. Part of it, I think, is because she was a working class person in a very professional environment. Part of it is also because she was a first woman who didn't effortlessly sail over the hurdles. She was a female first who got beat up by sexism and classism. We somehow want to tell a story that women entered into the ranks of power and then all was well. And this is a story of a woman who entered into the ranks of power at the highest level and all was not well.
Doreen Mattingly is Associate Professor of Women's Studies at San Diego State University and author of A Feminist in the White House, Midge Costanza, The Carter Years, and America's Culture Wars. Doreen, thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.